Namaste and welcome to the Living India podcast by Purvi Shah Paulini. On business topics and global events in connection with spirituality. Integral and sustainable change means to integrate this aspect on a deeper level as well. Because knowing people means knowing business. Hello and welcome, Norbert Wirth, to Living India's new podcast. You are the Managing Director of Hawa & Becker India Private Limited. Very warm welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. You are right now sitting in India, in Gujarat, which is in the western part of India. And it would be very kind of you if you could give us a short introduction of yourself and a little bit of the company and a short insight of the history and why you are there.
Yes, my name is Norbert Wirth. I'm the managing director of Hafer & Böcker. We are a German mid-sized manufacturer of packing machines and packing solutions for all kinds of bulk and liquid materials. And our customers come from cement, chemical, building material, food, mining, and pharmaceutical industry. Hafer & Böcker has its headquarters in Elde. This is North Rhine-Westphalia. And is represented worldwide with manufacturing subsidiaries in Latin America, USA, China, and in India. The group employs around 3,000 employees and is generating a turnover of around 460 million euros. I am 50 years old. I was born in Munich. I lived there until my final exams at school. Then I studied, and shortly after my university studies, I left to Dubai. Then I lived in the Middle East for 15 years. Then later I went back to Germany for 3 years, was responsible for the African market, Northeast, West, Central Africa, for MAN Truck and Bus. Then for the same company, I went to Russia for a couple of years as after sales director. And from Russia, from very cold Russia, I went to hot India.
That's a very impressive CV you are right now presenting here. And now you have loads of experience abroad, especially Africa. So why did you consider also to live in India?
When I lived in Dubai for 15 years, a lot of my colleagues, neighbors, friends, they come from India. And as you all know, India is quite close to the Middle East. So I got to use Indian culture, to the Indian food in India, in Dubai, because you get it everywhere. And then it was a very, very nice tourism destination to go from Dubai, because from Dubai going to Europe all the time, it's about 6 hour flight, to India, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And this is how I started to discover India. And as a private person, I think I have been pretty much everywhere, from Goa to the north. I have been in Kerala. I have been in beautiful places, very interesting places like Varanasi, Jaipur, of course, pretty much everything. And also for business, we had in Dubai a lot of purchase parts from India. So I traveled mostly to Pune and to Mumbai and Delhi at that time. So I know the big cities, but I also know all the beautiful places.
Okay. And since when are you right now based in Gujarat?
It's about 2.5 years from now. Right. 2.5 years I'm living here.
Okay. And how fast did you get acquainted in general to India and maybe also to Gujarat? Or the question is also, do you find a very big difference in Gujarat to the other cities you mentioned?
Definitely. So first of all, I get acquainted quite quickly because I've lived in many different countries and I have never really difficulties to be acquainted. Wherever I lived, I adjusted myself to the local circumstances. I rather learn from new cultures and evaluate opportunities of combining my experiences and knowledge with local circumstances. I never try to change mentalities and teach what I think is right. What I've seen that a lot of people who go to a foreign country for the first time, they bring their mindset from home into a foreign country. And you always hear sentences like, but in Germany, we would do like this. In Germany, it works like a new country. And for me, it's very important to really adopt, to see how do people live, how do people work, how they do communicate with each other. And then I adopt myself. And yes, the second question, is Gujarat different to some other places in India? Yes, it is. I must say for an expatriate, a German expatriate going to India, especially when I'm single, I don't have family, but for a man with family, it might be difficult because here you don't find many international schools. It's a dry state. You can't go out to bars to meet some friends, to watch football in a bar like you can do in other tier one or big Indian cities like New Delhi, like Mumbai, like Kolkata. I have a lot of friends there, but they have a big social life with a lot of foreigners, which you don't have here in Gujarat.
Okay. And but still being there with a company, what advantages do you see in Gujarat for a company being located there?
I don't know exactly when or why the company has settled down here in Vadodara. We have one company division, which is a wire weaving division, which is also located in Oelde. And they have founded a joint venture, I think, more than 10 years ago. And that's why it was the decision. I think the decision was made to come here because then we are neighbors to our other sister company in Gujarat. On the other side, Gujarat is very much developed. When you're driving on the roads here, everything is in a very good shape. And we as Harbour & Becker, we are catering a lot to the Indian chemical industry. And Gujarat, especially Vadodara, is a hub for the Indian chemical industry, especially for pigment manufacturers.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, I feel, of course, very close to Gujarat because my parents originated from there and my father was born and raised not far away from Vadodara. It's a place called Halol, you must be knowing. So it's also nice to see that the relationship between living India and Harbour & Becker is also since long time, I think about 2008 and 2010. It started here in Germany and then also went to India, gave workshops and consultancies. And that was, it's very nice to see how it grows and how the relationship remained till today. That's very good to see. Germany, as you see, is the most important trade partner within the EU and the sixth most important trade partner worldwide. And when in 1991 the reforms opened, the Indian economy, the bilateral trading volume had increased drastically. It is clear, though, that not everything is smooth and easy when you settle down in India. And as very often shown in many official presentations, it's really not that easy as it is shown. What are the biggest challenges you are facing, as a company and, of course, personally? These are two points which are very curious to hear.
As a company, there are a few things. In India, you have a big price sensitivity, which is kind of one-sided, in my opinion, because people have very high expectations, but not willing to pay a high price. We as a German manufacturer of machines are experiencing this very much, or very often, that the customer, let's take a chemical customer, he has requirements to pack his material in the utmost accuracy, in the utmost speed, to be absolute, have clean filling, all these kind of things. And then we come with a price tag and we said, okay, no, if this is this expensive, then I rather go with the locally produced machine, not to have this accuracy and not having this environmental friendliness. So this I'm hearing very often, also a member of the Indian Chemical Council. And when we are talking about environmental friendly production, everybody's interested. They said, yes, we need to fight for a cleaner India. And we are very much interested to get technology to produce cleaner. Then a filter manufacturer, for example, is approaching these companies and is telling them that the a complete filter technology might cost more than 100,000 euros. And then they back off. As this is sometimes the problem I'm facing here with colleagues, with employees. It's more this hierarchy thinking. We have great managers. We have absolutely great people. They are very well educated, but they're not speaking up. Even if I'm making a mistake or if I'm seeing something a little bit wrong, maybe because I'm not so acquainted with India yet, they would never tell me that this is wrong. They say, yes, okay, do it like you want, sir, because you are the boss and the boss is always right. This is what I'm a little bit missing, this upsism, which I don't have here very often. What you hear from other colleagues from German companies is always the same thing, payment moral. That the payments are delayed to a very big extent. It's tried to be postponed and not with very valid reasons. And when you ask, you often hear excuses. Or in the worst case, I had this many, many times, when I'm calling a customer and I'm asking him for payment because it's long overdue, then he gives me one excuse. If I'm calling a second time, he just don't answer the phone anymore. And this is what I'm missing. If he has a payment problem, it's not an issue to talk to us and said, okay, can we find a way to postpone the payment for 2 months, for 3 months? We can talk about this. But in such a case, to just shut off the phones, they have sometimes a little bit issues with.
Mm-hmm. And
as a company.
And do personally, you have... Yeah, just one question. Okay. Do you have an idea why they don't, they shut down the phones or they won't call you back?
I think it's a little bit of the fear of confrontation. Because what I, on one side, like very much, people in India are very, very friendly. You can talk with them in a nice way. They normally don't get loud. They don't shout. But when it really comes to a confrontation, which is maybe also uncomfortable for them because they must admit that they can't pay, for example. And then to say, before I have to explain, I rather don't talk at all. This is, I understand where this comes from. Same with my colleagues. If there is a problem, I'm telling them all the time, please speak up, tell me, come to me. It's like, I'm not chopping your head off. Come to me, and then the earlier you come, the earlier we will find a possibility to rectify this problem. But if you see that there is an issue and you're continuing knowing about this, trying to solve it yourself until it's absolutely catastrophical, and then you come to me, then this is an issue. But this happens very, very often.
Okay.
And also when I'm asking, why do you always come now and tell me this? Then many times I'm hearing, yeah, I didn't want to disturb you, sir, or I wanted to solve the problem myself, sir. But in my German way of thinking, we are more confronting each other and trying to solve the problem if there is one.
Okay, it's more also, if I read between the lines, it's something like I'm losing my face, and before I lose my face, I'd rather say everything is fine and wait till you as a boss approach the co-workers or your
big extent, yes,
business partner. Okay, very interesting.
And it's also that they like to have a good relationship also in our company. And I'm hearing very often then when we're having a meeting, and after the meeting, I'm getting some criticism about other colleagues. And when I'm asking, why don't you speak up in the meeting? Yeah, I didn't want to blackmail. I didn't want to finger point to my colleague. I didn't want to say bad things about my colleague, which I understand here in India, it is taken like this. He has attacked me in a way. He has criticized me. Whereas in our society, or let's say in a German company, this is more constructive criticism, that we talk, we discuss issues and problems without getting personal.
Very true. Okay. And you wanted to say something about your personal challenges.
Yeah, my personal challenges. The biggest thing is food. Yeah, I always love to when I'm going to Mumbai, to Delhi, to Hyderabad, to the big cities. There I can go to a nice hotel, to the Hilton Hotel, for example, and have Italian food with a glass of wine. Gujarat is a dry state, so I can't drink a wine here in the restaurant, and I could get a liquor license, but drinking at home is boring. My biggest issue here is the waste, and I'm very much shocked when I see how much me as a single person is using plastic. I use bottled water for cooking. I use bottled water when I'm making tea. I drink bottled water and not from the tap, although it's filtered, but I want to be a little bit careful. And now it's very hot, more than 40 degrees. And then at the end of a weekend, Monday morning, I'm carrying 12 bottles of plastic down. The milk, I'm having cereals in the morning, and then it comes in the small plastic pouches. So I'm using probably 4 or 5 plastic pouches of milk. And when I think about a family with 5, 6, 7 members, how many pouches of milk they must waste every week? I mean, per month we are going into thousands of these small pouches. And this makes me very often very sad, because this is one of India's biggest problems, that everything is plastic. When I'm going to the laundry shop and I have given him 10 shirts, the 10 shirts come with 10 plastic covers. And I always tell them, look, give me the 10 shirts, put one plastic around it. This is more than enough. No, 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 we do it always like this. And you are wasting so much of plastic. And the plastic collected separately, it is then collected in bulk, and I don't know what they do with it later. Maybe they just put it on one of these depots, which is, for me, a bit of an issue.
Okay. Now, my learning, but I, of course, I see that in India too. I'm traveling very frequently to India. And on one hand, to see, for example, just recently I was in Shimla, and you are fined with 5,000 rupees if you carry a plastic bag. That's interesting to see. And then you have such places like, of course, in many places in Gujarat, but also in the south, wherever even Mumbai was trying to ban plastic, or Maharashtra was trying to ban plastic totally, but not yet successfully, if I'm not wrong, right?
This is right. And also in Gujarat, in fast food restaurants, they try to have no plastic straws anymore than you had straws made out of paper. But this was then one initiative, but many people don't know why they are doing this. And just recently, in the car, I looked at a policeman. He was standing there to guide the traffic, and he was drinking, I don't know, milk or fruit juice from this plastic pouch, and he sucked it in and he threw it as well. And I thought, yeah, what example is this? Or I give you another example. I love to play golf. We have a fantastic golf club here in Vadodara. And whenever I'm drinking a Coke, I'm always buying a Coke for the caddy. That is mandatory when you play. I was drinking the Coke and put it in my the empty can in my golf bag. And he took it and threw it into the bushes. Whereas I'm asking myself, why are you throwing the can? And he told me, it's like, because it's empty. I said, yeah, I know, but why did I put my empty can in my golf bag? He said, I don't know. So it was very difficult to make him understand that throwing it, somebody needs to clean it up, or it doesn't rotten. So I had a long conversation, and I was very, very happy that a week later I was playing with him, and he just took the empty can, put it in my golf bag, and smiled at me, which showed me he understood. And I'm pretty sure that he will not throw this can anymore. Not because I was shouting or trying to lecture him. It's just to have a normal conversation. And this is, to a certain extent, still missing, the education of the people why they should not throw so much garbage on the roads.
Okay, that's very interesting to hear, and that's also matching to my experiences, even with my family, wherever they are in India. And the contrast to that, what I'm experiencing with organic farmers who are trying to do their level best to really ban everything and do as much organic as possible. And I can recommend you a golf course in next to Madurai. It's called Kodaikanal, and it's the first biodynamic golf course in the world. So maybe that would be very interesting for you to visit.
Definitely, because this is what I really love. Yeah.
And now that's very interesting, because I think there is a small link. I would also like to shift a little bit to the topic spirituality. And since it's very interesting to see, on one hand, India is a very spiritual country. It's a country of gods, thousands of gods, and the Hinduism and Islam and Christianity, all religions are there. And how do you experience this in your daily life? On one hand, of course, in business, also with your colleagues and co-workers, and of course, in private, if you have experience in that.
So spirituality in India, it's omnipresent. So you find it everywhere. On the way to work, you find many small temples. When I'm going to buy milk in the milk shop, they are having a small puja, lighting this candle scents. You hear always the bells also where I'm living. So I'm confronted with it all the time. But after a while, I'm not actively seeing this anymore, because it's omnipresent and we are living with it. In the company itself, I don't see this so much unless we're having a new car, which we make a puja for it, so a small worship, or inaugurating a new machine, or if there are any special festive days, which I appreciate very much, because I lived in Dubai, as I said, for many years, and I had the another experience that the religion plays a much more critical role in daily life. You hear this also in the language, mashallah, inshallah, if God wants. And in many ways, also doing business, I had the feeling that the Muslim colleagues were kind of lecturing me, and so the religion played a bigger part in the daily life. And in India, it is not. You see the temples, you see the people wearing their, what is it called?
Bindi.
Bindi, for example. You see the traditional dresses. Hello? Yeah. Entschuldigung, waren Sie gerade weg. So Tilak in Bindu, this is the right word. The garland of flowers, the intense sticks, you all see this. But if you are, if you don't want to talk about it, nobody will force you to talk about it. Yeah. This subject is more on a private matter, which I really appreciate. Nobody tries to explain me and how the life is and how should I live. Yeah. I'm not married, I'm single, which is not very common here. I have never felt that people try to lecture me why and why you don't are married. And if I'm asking a question, and this is what I appreciate as well, I get honest and detailed answers.
Very interesting.
About the religion, about people think, about their spirituality. But it is separated. They leave my spirituality to me, and I leave the same thing for them.
So what does then spirituality mean for you?
For me, it's more spirituality is more about the religion. So I'm a religious person. I believe in God. I'm in Germany, for example, with my bicycle. I love to spend time in churches. And in India itself, I very much like the Indian flute music. I like the mantras very much. Because it has such a warm, nice, and soothing effect. And I said that I've been to Varanasi before, and every person visiting India for the first time, I can always suggest that's like, go to Varanasi, and you don't need to travel around India, because when you want to experience India, go to Varanasi, then you see everything. And it's difficult to explain in a few words, but when you are there in the morning when the sun comes up, and you're sitting at the Ghats, and you hear the mantras, you see the holy people, the monks. This is something out of this world. And I fully understand when people are moving here or visiting India for this Ayurveda treatments, this music, this soothing effects, how the people move in a very slow way. This is a way of living in India, and this is what I'm appreciating and really loving a lot.
Okay, thank you. And do you think that spirituality is needed in business?
No, I don't think it's needed in business. Or not in every business. I think I was talking about an Ayurveda hotel. If you have an Ayurveda hotel and you assemble your stuff in the morning and you start with a mantra, or you start with yoga, then it might make sense. But we are a German company, and we have also in our company, we have employees with different religion. We have Muslims, we have Hindus, we have Christians. So there it would be very difficult to cater for all different kind of spiritual needs. But what I know, and what I think is very good, that everybody takes care of his daily life in a different way. Yeah, I see this when people come to the office and then they have this bindi at the bindi. I know that they had a ceremony. Yeah, they had a ceremony before they got to work. So I think everybody is preparing like this. I have our sales director. He tells me he's waking up 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning to do yoga, to have a cup of tea, to be prepared for the day. And this is kind of spiritual. And he's doing this, and this is fine. But I would never tell them, why are you doing it and what are you doing, or to tell them that they have to do certain spiritual what is the right word?
Practices or?
Practices, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see, for me, it's very interesting to see, especially in India, on one hand, you have those people who have somehow a deep connectivity to something. And on the other hand, as you described, they are throwing away the things. So the plastic, as you described that, you know, so it's not only India, it's all over the world, you know, and it's also happening here in Germany. So I have the feeling nowadays, it's, and especially looking at the situation we are worldwide right now in this corona pandemic, that for me personally, it's really my personal opinion, that I think the next step which each individual needs and each company needs is really get more connected to actually the planet. And this has actually, I differ a little bit between religion and spirituality, because me personally, I believe there is no spiritual person. We all are spiritual. And the disadvantage sometimes we live in is the word religion, because everything is tried to be covered with religion. But if you look very deep inside it, if you look at the Christianity, if you look at Islam, if you look at Hinduism or Buddhism, they have actually many, many things in common. And getting this in common and then bringing it out to the world, which hopefully makes it a better world, I feel is nowadays so much needed. That's where I see.
You're absolutely right. And I hear this a lot of times, this question from visitors, for example. They come to India and they make the same observation. They say on one side, people love India. They talk, they're very nationalist. They love their country, Mother Earth, or whatever you call it, God's country in Kerala. And then a lot of my family or friends are visiting me. They say, but why do you have then such a high pollution? Or when you see the rivers, like the river Ganges, yeah, when it comes from where you have, it is clear water, it's beautiful. And the further you look down, the more polluted, the more dirty it gets. And I always get these questions, like, why is this happening? When this river is holy, why do they allow to get it this much polluted? So this is something, that's why I'm just mentioning it, because this is the question I'm getting. This is most This is the first question I always get.
Yeah. It's also not easy to answer that with one sentence, and needs to get a little bit better understanding. It's not an excuse for that, what is happening there and anywhere else in the world, but it's maybe an explanation, but it would take much longer than this podcast here.
I think so as well.
Yes. Now, looking at the Indo-German relationships, historically, India recognized Germany diplomatically immediately after the Second World War. And India is going to be the second biggest economy in 2050, whereas Germany might lose a bit of its economic strength. India and China, as the biggest economies, will have to be role models that maintain the world peace and thus the world together. Which assets that, I mean also the values and know-how, does Germany have in order to be a role model in the future for the world? And of course, the same question would be for India. Where do you see those values?
This is a sore point, and I explicitly would like to give my own opinion on this.
Yes.
So I'm convinced, because you were mentioning the Second World War, and I'm convinced that Germany has achieved a fabulous development since the Second World War, and with good reason became one of the leading industrial nations in the world. This is love for technical protection, hard work, commitment, discipline, state-of-the-art universities, cohesion, thirst of knowledge. These are all preconditions how they achieved it. However, I now, living in India, having a look in Germany, I'm reading newspapers, I'm looking at talk shows, and I'm personally feeling that this attitude in Germany is changing towards more freedom, feel-good lifestyle, environmental protection, freedom of speech, multicultural societies. All this is very, very important issues, and I'm sharing all of them to a certain degree. But I think that the current development is getting a little bit out of control and into extremes. So when I'm looking, for example, at German talk shows, I'm missing a constructive controversy, common problem-solving efforts, respectful interaction, accepting different opinions, and working towards a goal that serves everybody, even if compromises are necessary. So we are a German company, we are an engineering company, we are a machine manufacturer, and yes, we are worldwide renowned for the superb technology that we are offering in around the world. But again, when I'm looking at my father, he was the typical German, yeah, engineer, and they said, okay, we produce technology and we export technology to the world. So they wanted to really prosper, they wanted to grow, to be a technology leader. So this in Germany is changing a little bit at the moment.
Okay. And now, and about India, what do you think, what role model can India play?
I think India's biggest asset undoubtedly is the younger generation with a superb education, very good language skills, high adaptability, intelligence and accuracy. Under my observation and experience, Indian nationals are very hardworking and target-orientated. The latter is sometimes a little bit of a problem, because when I'm looking at CVs, for example, then I'm always reading or when I'm asking, why do you want to change your company or your job where you have only been working for 2 years, to look for a better opportunity? This is, I would say, 95% of the cases the answer, which I see they are very target orientated to bring things forward, but also in their personal life. When they're working in our company, they're giving really their best. They're very committed. They're hardworking. But when they see after 2-3 years, it's like they're not coming further. And if they change the company, go somewhere else, they get immediately a promotion, then they do this. And many German or many international companies are facing this problem in India, that the fluctuation is extremely high. What I experience and what I like very much in India is that India is a very peaceful country. Yes, there are certain conflict herds around in India as well, But in general, I don't have the feeling that India is striving to become a world superpower to lecture, to educate other countries, and to override other countries. So when you see, for example, United States, Russia, China, so it's more like conquering the world with their technology. India says, we want to develop, but we want to grow, and we want to grow in peace. So this is a very, very good thing to work with Indians. And I think also this is the right attitude towards modern times and the world.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And where are the points, or where do you see the points where both countries' assets can merge and something new can be created? And how can this be maybe connected in politics, economics, cultures, and society?
This is like we very often that both nationalities need to be more flexible. So the Germans could be more flexible in understanding the Indian way of doing business, and the Indians could be more flexible in using their knowledge and experience. Self-motivated teamwork efforts and knowledge sharing is often not this common yet. Where I'm seeing very big potential in cooperation between India and Germany, India must rethink their current production processes, because in the worldwide comparison, India still is not on the very high automation level, but on the other side is striving to become one of the world's fastest growing and biggest economies. When you listen to this Make in India, what Mr. Modi is promoting, and when I'm talking to Indians, they're proud to have such a big GDP growth, and they would like to continue with this. But this means that the Indian industry must be, or let's put it in a different way, in the past until now, a lot of things in India are not automated. So they are done manually. You see this during the Corona crisis, for example, what this means. A lot of our customers, cement customers, chemical customers, they are having, they are operating their machines, they are producing their goods. And now during the Corona crisis, their staff was sent home, or they just left them to go back to their villages. So now as the economy, as the lockdown is easing and people are driving up their factories again, they are facing the problem that the people are not coming back. Yeah, but they rely on the people. Without the people, they can't produce. So if they would be more modernized or more automated production, then they just speak easily said, but to just push a button and the machine is running and then they can produce. So I think especially here after the current COVID-19 crisis, I believe that there will be a big change in the Indian industry to go for more automation. A lot of Indian companies are having export business, growing export business, and the importing countries, they have certain requirements in terms of cleanliness, packing accuracy, health standards, and this India need to cater for very soon. And where do they get all this kind of technology? For example, from a German company like us. And yes, we would like to make business in India. That's why we are here for as well. But I'm seeing myself, as well as the company I'm working for, as a front runner to not only make business in monetary terms, also to help India to become more modern. It's a similar thing we have been talking about the environment and about the waste issue. As you know, you have been grown up in Germany. It was for us a very long process to learn how to segregate waste, how to deal with it. So we were grown in this, and then we developed. After, I think, the whole thing took 20, 30 years until we have learned about this. Our children automatically, they follow this pattern. India doesn't have 30 years of time to do this. They need a solution right now. And as Germany has this technology, they have the knowledge about waste treatment, recycling industry. I think, and I would really love to see more and more cooperation between German companies in the recycling industry, together with Indian companies, to speed up the cleaning up of waste in India, and to make the factories more safe, more environmental friendly, and most of all, to make them safe for the employees. And last but not least, I need to say this as well. I have unfortunately seen in certain areas, in certain companies, that the work safety that for us in Germany is absolutely normal is not there yet. I've seen chemical companies where a cleaning woman is standing there with flip-flops in contagious fluids cleaning the floor. I mean, these kind of things, I think we as Germans, we or Europeans should really help that these things are being stopped.
Okay.
And don't forget, this is also when look at an American company who is importing goods from India. Yeah, the garment industry, for example, many more companies abroad are looking how people are treated, how people, what are the working conditions. And in order to comply with this, India needs to be more modern, taking care about environmental friendliness and health safety, because otherwise certain companies, like you know this in Germany as well, textile companies, they said, if the people are not paid well, if the people have no safe working environment, we are not buying from this company anymore. So that's why I think India will very, very quickly develop in this automation of their industry and in making it environmental more friendly.
Okay. Now you've said already some things about what companies might consider when entering India. What are your last words or your suggestions if companies are thinking entering the Indian market? Is it worth, and what is the key point they would have to consider when coming to India?
It is 100% worthwhile coming to India. This is no doubt, and this is being known all over the world, that India is a growing country. The population, I think I've heard in the next 5-6 years, might even be bigger than in China. India has a very young population, so the middle class will become bigger. The industries are becoming bigger. As I said, there's more import business. India has still certain administrative tasks and bureaucracy that makes it sometimes difficult to found a company here. But when you see the market potential in India is really huge. And India is also located very well in the world, because when you think about other Asian countries, or think about Southeast Asia, yeah, Malaysia, Singapore, Vietnam, these are all countries that are upcoming, Thailand, Indonesia. So I know a lot of companies that they're having their manufacturing hub here in India, but delivering the goods produced in India to Southeast Asia. This is the same thing with, for example, service engineers. This is what we are doing, that our company in Germany is selling machines to, let's say, Singapore. The customer in Singapore calls Oelde in Germany Friday evening and says, our machine is not working, we need to repair it. So until they get the goods to Frankfurt Airport being sent to Singapore, together with the service technician, it takes a long time and it's costly. What we do, if a Havenberger customer in Singapore has this problem, we are taking the stock on a pallet, ship it to Ahmedabad, 2 hours, 4.5 hour flight from Ahmedabad to Singapore, and the parts are there together with a service technician. So we help the customers, and that's why India is a very big hub for service as well as for manufacturing, not only in India, but also in the Southeast Asian region. The other question you ask, you need to understand India. India is definitely not an easy market. And as I mentioned before, people are not speaking up very often. So it takes a considerably longer to understand a mindset, how people thinking, how they live, how they understand, what their values are, how you can work together with them. So here I can only suggest companies who would like to come to India to first of all send an expatriate to see how things are working. Because the most important thing is that you combine the German mentality with the Indian mentality. So now I'm running this company here for the last 2.5 years. Now I know how it is functioning, how it is working. Now we would be in a very good position to employ an Indian general manager. But I would be the link between Germany and India still. And when you see the big blue chip companies like German companies like BASF, Covestro, Lanxess, they all have Indian general managers and managing directors here. But these companies know the Indian market and they know India very well. And the Indian directors, I know many of them, they are even perfectly German speaking. They are traveling to BASF for the last 20, 25 years. But this is the critical thing, to understand India. And only when you understand the people, how they work, when you understand the customers, then you're able to make really business in India. I have recently I spoke with one gentleman who is running a very big German company in Bangalore, and he was holding a speech, and he said, when you want to make business in India, don't come to India with hand luggage. So I like this saying very much, because it shows, and he shared my opinion about this. If you want to make business in India, don't come with hand luggage. It will take you some time to develop, to understand, but then you have a very prosperous business in India.
Thank you very much, Norbert. You've given wonderful insights of your experience and of the last years. And it also matches with that what I say in my intercultural workshops and in my consultancies. Patience, give yourself time, give India time, and it will be possible to be successful as a company in India. Thank
you. I must say one more thing I have to add, because you are talking about intercultural, so that's, I would like to talk about your book quickly. When I came to India, I was buying this book in a bookshop in Passau. At that time, I didn't know you. And I was reading this book, and it was very, very informative and very, very good. So for somebody who has never been in India, this should be really a kind of a Bible before coming here. So I really liked the book very much. Later, I had the chance to meet you in person, but this was a coincidence. So I bought your book because I read it, and I can suggest everybody who is interested to make business in India to read your book.
This is very kind of you. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for your time and giving us the insights. And I wish you all the best and a good time still, the time you are in India. And also, of course, during the pandemic situation, that the restrictions would ease very soon. And see you soon in person again.
I'm looking forward to this. Thank you very much, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.